From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Iran has declared its latest round of mass protests over. Speaking to the press, the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard announced that after 6 days of protests, the, quote, troublemakers had been arrested and that the unrest was over. Nearly 500 people have been arrested and more than 20 killed. It was just about a week ago that tens of thousands of people took to the streets of Iranian cities, unhappy with their authoritarian government and the nation's stagnant economy, among other things. They were the biggest public demonstration since 2009. Very quickly, however, the news about Iran's demonstration were tied up in U.S. politics after President Donald Trump waded into the battle between the Iranian people and their government. Trump tweeted that he respected Iran's people in their fight against a, quote, corrupt and, quote, poorly run government. He then quickly edited his tweet, replacing the words fight to take back with try to take back. My guest is Ahmad Sadri. He is the Goethe Professor of Islamic World Studies and Professor of Sociology at Lake Forest College. Welcome to the program, Ahmad.
I'm happy to be here with you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. So this happens quite periodically in Iran, where the population rises up, takes to the streets, and over time gets quelled by the government. Sometimes there are sort of reformist measures the government takes. But how do you explain why last Thursday there were mass protests that have gone on now for days and are arguably over?
Well, I think this was really an explosion of desperation and hopelessness and discontent with the economic hardships, unemployment, inflation, but I think even more importantly, with the perception of economic injustice, allocation of resources to religious endowments that was revealed by President Rouhani as a gambit in his ongoing fight against the theocratic forces of the supreme leader, added fuel to this fire. And the basic perception of economic injustice in terms of the rentier economy of Iran, where it's not how much you produce and how good of an entrepreneur you might be, it is whom you know, and that knowledge of the people in power is in a way the most important source of capital. People who don't have an in onto that kind of inner circle will feel forever left out. And so I think economic injustice and perception of economic injustice and economic hardships were one of the major sources of this. But also I think a kind of cultural discontent, the sense that they are not represented, people don't feel themselves represented in the foreign policy and in the basically cultural lifestyle that is being advertised and promoted by mass media, government-owned and operated mass media. That kind of lets people towards a sort of lack of belonging, the sense of lack of belonging. And in time, with a few additional causes, more or less accidental causes, like a spike in the price of eggs, for instance, or some ill-advised demonstration created by some right-wing elements in order to put pressure on Rouhani's government. Those accidental causes basically bring this discontent, this cake powder to an explosion. I think this was one of the examples of this kind of uprising that Iran has never seen before to this extent.
Wow, so you are saying that this is much greater than what happened in 2009 when we saw mass demonstrations, there were people killed, and one young woman, in fact, famously brutally shot to death on camera, her video of her death, sparking even more anger. You're saying what has happened this past week is more significant?
It is not more significant, it is unprecedented. Because the 2009 was much more severe and much more widespread. It was a political uprising with a leadership, with a vision of future. They knew what they wanted, and what they wanted was achievable within the structure of the government. This uprising was, in a way, blind. It didn't have a leadership. It didn't have a kind of achievable set of achievable goals. It was kind of an explosion of desperation. And in this sense, it should be really worrying, although it was predicted, it was very, very predictable that it would be crushed very easily, even without bringing in the shock troops of Basij and the Revolutionary Guards. But it should really worry the government more, or at least as much as 2009 uprising known as the Green Uprising.
So how do you assess the government's response? They've essentially declared that the protests are over. They've rounded up the quote-unquote troublemakers. And of course, often authoritarian governments follow a certain script when they have mass uprisings. And often what their response is only a short term, only works in the short term, doesn't actually, if they're not addressing the causes of these protests, they're simply putting off the inevitable.
Indeed, I think they were never that worried about it, given the fact that their numbers were not that high, given that they were not concentrated in the big cities. Most of them happen in cities that most Iranians can't even place on an Iranian map, and Iranians are pretty good at geography. They were very, very widespread, and the slogans were all over the map, from calling for the return of royalty to
the return of royalty.
So again, it was very disorganized. The government was not worried about it, but I think they are wrong about that, because this is a symptom of a kind of discontent, a kind of delegitimization of the government that they will ignore at their peril.
What about the role of the United States? The tweet by Donald Trump about supporting the people of Iran against their corrupt government. First, he tweeted in their fight to take back, and then he tweeted, deleted the tweet and changed it to try to take back. Certainly, even if what he's saying might be a valuable idea for a head of state to say this about another country, did it help or hurt the protests?
I don't think it had that much of an influence at all. Trump is universally disliked in Iran because people consider him the person responsible for the ban of Iranians traveling to the United States. And the cause of these economic hardships that people are experiencing. So I would say his influence on the demonstrations was very little, especially given how small in scale these demonstrations were. So I would say the role of the United States, because of the Trump administration of President Trump, is approaching zero.
And it's interesting, of course, that he expressed support for the people of Iran, the very people that his Muslim ban has targeted.
Indeed, indeed. That is why what he's saying is not believable to the people on the street, because they consider him an enemy, not of the state, but of ordinary Iranians, because not the state that wants to visit the United States, their relatives or students who come to Iran, they are banned from returning back to their studies and things like that. So there is no love lost there, and ordinary Iranians don't have much of an interest in a kind of rescue mission from the American Marines.
Now, what about Trump's reversal, at least in principle, of the Obama administration's progress between U.S.-Iran relations? The U.S. had sort of reached a detente with Iran under the leadership of Rouhani in Iran, Obama here in the U.S., and of course, right from the start during his campaign, Trump denounced that. The Republican Party criticized it. A lot of conservatives have targeted that. And where does that lie today, and does it play, if at all, in within Iran's domestic politics?
I think the operative word is if at all. Really, the under President Obama, the United States was going in the direction of having a positive influence on the Iranian society in general. The American soft power has always been here, and it was being connected to the American foreign policy, and things were moving in the up, in the positive direction. With these hateful tweets and policies and exclusionary attitude, all of that goodwill is lost. And so basically under President Trump, the United States of America has cut itself off from the Iranian street, from the Iranian masses. Iranians have a very, very positive view towards ordinary Americans. If you talk to any Americans who have traveled to Iran in the last couple of years, they universally say that they are greeted with open arms by Iranians. And so, but the view of American state has suffered a grievous blow by the policies of Mr. Trump.
Also, how are Iran's protests being viewed within Israel? This is a country that has been in an almost a proxy war with Iran in other parts of the world. The U.S. and Israel are sort of equally reviled in some sectors of Iranian society.
Well, the Iranians really don't... I think the best way of putting it, Iranians don't care about Arab-Israeli conflict. They don't love Israel. They don't hate Israel. They are just sick and tired of hearing about Arab-Israeli conflict as claptrap on the mass media. So that is the general attitude. If you leave Iranians to their own devices, they would rather not ever hear the name of Israel again or the Arab-Israeli conflict. They have enough trouble to solve at home, and so that it would be, I think, fair to say that they don't wanna be bothered about the Arab-Israeli conflict, and it's partly because the Iranian government, like every other Muslim government, especially in the Middle East, they have played this Arab-Israeli conflict as a kind of propaganda trope, and Iranian public is basically uninterested in this. One of the most unpopular policies of the Islamic Republic is meddling in the in that conflict, in basically sending people to fight in Syria. And the Iranian populace is not really that savvy about, you know, Iranian national interests, should there be any, in that part of the world. What they really want to do is to kind of not think about the whole thing and focus on their domestic issues. And this has been one of the consistent slogans going back decades, going back to 1990s, when there were demonstrations by teachers, for instance. For the first time, we heard the slogan, "Neither Gaza nor Lebanon, let's focus on Iran." And so we have heard these kinds of slogans. Again, that is part of that sense of alienation of the public from the foreign policy of the Iranian state. They don't feel themselves represented. Whereas 40 years ago, these anti-Israeli slogans had a lot of cachet. People were interested in it. Time has proven to them that nothing good has come from that kind of policy, and they would rather basically not think about the Arab-Israeli conflict in its entirety.
Now, the Iranian government has claimed that the U.S. and Israel are the ones fomenting the protests, and that seems to be wholly untrue. Of course, this benefits the Iranian government to have someone like Trump in power, to have an oppositional force in Israel, because they can simply dismiss their internal protests as being the work of foreign interference, right?
Yes and no. Actually, the people who are in power always they consider any disturbance as a conspiracy by foreigners. And that is to be expected because they don't want to accept any responsibility for it. And everything that expresses any dislike of them must be something that is fomented by outsiders. But let us not forget that there is a lot of agitation from outside.
Right.
There is agitation by the new alliance between Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the United States, and there are millions of dollars spent on websites, anti-state websites, and very expensive TV channels that are broadcast into Iran, and they are trying to foment unrest and revolution and upheaval. I really doubt that they have much of an influence. So I don't think that these are very effective. In terms of causal significance, I would say that they are really secondary and tertiary. Whatever happens in Iran is the result of dynamics within Iran. And the foreign agitation, I don't think it has had any influence, any appreciable influence in the last 40 years.
So finally, Ahmad, where do you think these protests will lead? What's next for the sort of civic engagement that the Iranian people, showed that they are interested in every few years? And even if the reasons for these protests might have been different than those in 2009, simply arresting your way out of the problem won't work for the Iranian government. What is next that you see on the horizon?
Well, it depends on how wise the government is. Again, when we say government, as I have discussed in my Al Jazeera piece, it's a divided government. There is a democratic interior part of the Iranian polity, the president and the parliament, and there's an exterior kind of hardened theocratic shell around it. So I think the democratic part would be more sensitive to these and would try to learn from this, learn the lesson of delegitimation, the danger of the sapping of the legitimation from a regime is more a mortal danger. But unfortunately, I think the more hardened right-wing elements in the system will treat this as another uprising after 2009 that they have successfully crushed. And so they will take pride in this and actually make it a badge of honor that they have an iron fist. And that would be foolhardy. They really should learn from this and change their ways, try to come closer to the ordinary people. These are not the upper classes, these are not the upper middle classes, these are not the urban classes. This is the ordinary folks, the wretched of the earth, in whose name this revolution was fomented 40 years ago. And if they are rising up in opposition, this should be a wake-up call. As it is said, it's very hard to wake up somebody who is pretending to sleep.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Ahmad. We will link to your Al Jazeera article from our website later. Thanks so much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Ahmad Sadri is the Goethe Professor of Islamic World Studies and Professor of Sociology at Lake Forest College. And we've been discussing the latest mass protests in Iran. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.